This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. The dates of April 4th and 5th, especially on this anniversary, on the 4th and 5th of April 1968, are key to the tragic and racist social history of the United States as a shocked nation awoke to the pain and violence of the overnight assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It was at 6:01 p.m. on the 4th of April, 68, at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, where a fatal rifle shot hit King as he stood on a second-floor balcony, with the bullet entering his right cheek, smashing his jaw, and traveling down his spinal cord and lodging finally in his shoulder. It was a fatal shot. Early national media reports of the incident were spotty, but by the late evening, spontaneous urban insurrections had begun in scores of American cities, including Washington, New York, Chicago, Baltimore, Louisville, Kansas City, and dozens more. One of the most poignant announcements of these breaking events surrounding the King assassination came in an impromptu speech by the former Attorney General and New York Senator and contemporaneous presidential candidate Robert Bobby Kennedy, who broke the news to supporters while en route to an Indianapolis campaign rally.
Do they know about Martin Luther King?
We have left it up to you, and let's see what can be happening.
Could you lower those signs, please? I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it's perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. For those of you who are black, considering the evidence evidently is that there were white people who were responsible, you can be filled with bitterness and with hatred and a desire for revenge. We can move in that direction as a country in greater polarization. Black people amongst blacks and white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand compassion and love. For those of you who are black and are tempted to be filled with hatred and mistrust of the injustice of such an act against all white people, I would only say that I can also feel in my own heart the same kind of feeling. I had a member of my family killed, but he was killed by a white man. But we have to make an effort in the United States. We have to make an effort to understand, to get beyond or go beyond these rather difficult times. My favorite poem, my favorite poet was Aeschylus. He once wrote, "Even in our sleep, pain which cannot forget falls drop by drop upon the heart, until in our own despair, against our will, comes wisdom through the awful grace of God." What we need in the United States is not division. What we need in the United States is not hatred. What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another. feeling of justice toward those who still suffer within our country, whether they be white or whether they be black.
The late Senator, presidential candidate, and former Attorney General, and cognomen of the bridge in New York City that used to be known as the Triborough, the late Robert Bobby Kennedy. That was his spontaneous speech on the night of the assassination of Martin Luther King, April 4th, 1968. Less than 24 hours later, Kennedy reflected even more deeply on the nature of American violence the following day, April 5th, 1968, when he addressed the City Club of Cleveland.
It is not a day for politics. I have saved this one opportunity, my only event of today, to speak briefly to you about the mindless menace of violence in America, which again stains our land and every one of our lives. It is not the concern of any one race. The victims of the violence are black and white, rich and poor, young and old, famous and unknown. They are most important of all, human beings whom other human beings loved and needed. No one, no matter where he lives or what he does, can be certain who next will suffer from some senseless act of bloodshed. And yet it goes on and on and on in this country of ours. Why? What has violence ever accomplished? What has it ever created? No martyr's cause has ever been stilled by an assassin's bullet. No wrongs have ever been righted by riots and civil disorders. A sniper is only a coward, not a hero. And an uncontrolled or uncontrollable mob is only the voice of madness, not the voice of the people. Whenever any American's life is taken by another American unnecessarily, whether it is done in the name of the law or in defiance of the law, by one man or by a gang, in cold blood or in passion, in an attack of violence or in response to violence, whenever we tear at the fabric of our lives, which another man has painfully and clumsily woven for himself and his children, whenever we do this, then the whole nation is degraded. Among free men, said Abraham Lincoln, there can be no successful appeal from the ballot to the bullet. And those who take such appeal are sure to lose their case and pay the cost. Yet we seemingly tolerate a rising level of violence that ignores our common humanity and our claims to civilization alike. We calmly accept newspaper reports of civilian slaughter in far-off lands. We glorify killing on movie and television screens, and we call it entertainment. We'd make it easier for men of all shades of sanity to acquire weapons and ammunition that they desire. Too often we honor swagger and bluster and the wielders of force. Too often we excuse those who are willing to build their own lives on the shattered dreams of other human beings. Some Americans who preach nonviolence abroad fail to practice it here at home. Some accuse others of rioting and inciting riots, have by their own conduct invited them. Some look for scapegoats. Others look for conspiracies. But this much is clear. Violence breeds violence. Repression breeds retaliation. And only a cleansing of our whole society can remove this sickness from our souls. For there is another kind of violence, slower, but just as deadly destructive as the shot or the bomb in the night. This is the violence of institutions, indifference, inaction, and decay. This is the violence that afflicts the poor, that poisons relations between men because their skin has different colors. This is the slow destruction of a child by hunger and schools without books and homes without heat in the winter. This is the breaking of a man's spirit by denying him the chance to stand as a father and as a man amongst other men. And this too afflicts us all. For when you teach a man to hate and to fear his brother, when you teach that he is a lesser man because of his color or his beliefs or the policies that he pursues, when you teach that those who differ from you threaten your freedom or your job or your home or your family, then you also learn to confront others, not as fellow citizens, but as enemies, to be met not with cooperation, but with conquest, to be subjugated and to be mastered. We learn at the last to look at our brothers as alien men with whom we share a city, but not a community. Men bound to us in common dwelling, but not in a common effort. We learn to share only a common fear, only a common desire to retreat from each other, only a common impulse to meet disagreement with force. For all this, there are no final answers for those of us who are American citizens. Yet we know what we must do, and that is to achieve true justice among all of our fellow citizens. The question is not what programs we should seek to enact. The question is whether we can find in our own midst and in our own hearts that leadership of humane purpose that will recognize the terrible truths of our existence. We must admit the vanity of our false distinctions, the false distinctions among men, and learn to find our own advancement in search for the advancement of all. We must admit to ourselves that our children's future cannot be built on the misfortune of another's. We must recognize that this short life can neither be ennobled or enriched by hatred or by revenge. Our lives on this planet are too short. The work to be done is too great to let this spirit flourish any longer in this land of ours. Of course, we cannot banish it with a program, nor with a resolution. But we can perhaps remember, if only for a time, that those who live with us are our brothers, that they share with us the same short moment of life, that they seek, as do we, nothing but the chance to live out their lives in purpose and in happiness, winning what satisfaction and fulfillment that they can. Surely this bond of common fate, surely this bond of common goals can begin to teach us something. Surely we can learn at the least to look around at those of us, of our fellow men, and surely we can begin to work a little harder to bind up the wounds among us and to become in our hearts brothers and countrymen once again. Tennyson wrote in Ulysses, "That which we are, one equal temper of heroic hearts, made weak by time and fate, but strong in will, to strive, to seek, to find, and not to yield."
Bobby Kennedy, speaking to the Cleveland City Club 44 years ago exactly, on the occasion of the 5th of April, 1968. Exactly 2 months and 2 days after that, RFK would meet the same violent gunshot death as Martin Luther King on the 6th of June, 1968, in a Los Angeles hotel, presidential campaign stuff.
Senator, how are you going to counter Mr. Humphreys and his backgrounding you as far as the delegate votes go?
You think you're so stuck to struggle for it?
Somebody said, Robert.
Oh my God. Senator Kennedy has been shot in the head. I am right here. Rayford Johnson has a hold of a man who apparently has fired the shot. He has fired the shot. He still has the gun. The gun is pointed at me at this moment. I hope they can get the gun out of his hand. Be very careful. Get the gun. Get the gun.
Get the gun.
Stay away from the gun.
Get the gun.
Stay away from the gun. His hand is frozen. Get his thumb. Get his thumb. Get his thumb. Take a hold of his thumb and break it if you have to. Get his thumb. Okay, now hold on to the guy. Hold on to him. Hold on to him, ladies and gentlemen. They have the gun away from the man. In this shot. They've got the gun. I can't see the man.
The assassination of Robert Kennedy on the 6th of June, 1968. In response to the assassination of Martin Luther King on the 4th of April, 1968, there was the next day a season of urban insurrections in scores of cities across the United States. And meanwhile, in New York City, less than 24 hours after King's killing, as much of America was burning, there was a rally for King in New York City's Central Park. That rally included such speakers as Dr. Benjamin Spock, Ossie Davis, James Forman, Flo Kennedy, and many others. It was originally broadcast live on Pacifica radio station WBAI, and we now hear some of the proceedings of that day. The attendees understandably had high passion and mixed emotion, and we'll hear how some of that rally unfolded.
My name is Lydia Williams. I'm from the Black Caucus. I'm also with Freedom and Peace Party. Do we know what we're out here for today? All right, let's prove it. Before I start, I want a moment of silence. I'm calling for a moment of complete silence. I want a moment of complete silence in the memory of Martin Luther King. I want a moment of complete silence in front and in back. You're supposed to be out here in the memory of a great black man that got killed by white racism. And I want a moment of complete silence. Thank you. It was hard to come by. Now let's get together here and get some facts straight. It's high time that things were made plain. Last night, something was proved. In Chicago, when the Black Caucus was formed, we made a 13-point resolution. One of them called for a white civilizing committee. People looked at us like we were out of our minds. They didn't know what we were talking about, because we were the barbarians. We were uncivilized. Well, last night you found out what I meant by a white civilizing committee. Last night, the white man's best friend was killed. His head was blown off by a white man. This is why you need to civilize the white community. We have practiced for years being nonviolent. We have practiced turning the other cheeks. We have become masters of turning the other cheek. And while Martin Luther King had his head turned and his other cheek up, somebody got him. So where does this leave us? I'm not sure. There's some hole cards to be played. I don't know what they are, and I'm not about to discuss them down here in Central Park Mall. You all gathered out here today to hear a whole lot of speeches and listen to a whole lot of notable speakers. But for the blacks in the audience, I hope you know where it's at. I do, and I hope all of you do too. For the whites in the audience, I hope they know where it's at. And I hope last night came as education, that the racists in this country can stop sitting on their backsides acting like they're all innocent, because the guilt didn't come from the man that shot the gun alone. It came from the ones that sat back and said, not I. I wouldn't do that. My friends won't do that. Some of my best friends are niggas. All that rhetoric sounds great, but the only best friend I got is a black man, and some of them I ain't trusting too far. Last night there was a lot of discussion on TV on who's going to take over now. Who's going to lead the nonviolent movement now? It sounded great. It went on till 2 o'clock in the morning. It was wonderful. Why should we keep producing leaders for white America to blow them down? We don't need the leader. It's the people's fight now. Black America doesn't have a problem. We've solved our problem. The few of us that were hanging out on the periphery that didn't know they had a problem and thought they had made it in the white man's country came found out last night when their Jesus got shot down that they ain't got it made. And it's time for all of them to come home. But now white America has the problem and they better hurry up about solving it. Southern Christian leadership called for the flags to be hung upside down because a disaster happened last night. I see them hanging at half-mast. That's great. But when white America discovers the disaster it performed last night, they'll turn them upside down in a hurry. I'm also appealing to my black brothers and sisters that's here today to be cool. Be cool. I think all of you know what I mean. Be cool. I didn't say a word. You're downtown. You know where you are. Look around you. The man is ready. You needn't think because you're an integrated crowd that it'll be any safer because the whites out here are considered white liberals and they're considered expandable. And if the man wants you, baby, he'll take them to get you. He can afford it. He's in the majority anyhow. He can afford these whites out here if it means taking them to get you. So just keep a cool head, you know. Get yourself together, and if you got something to do, do it right. Time I'd like to introduce someone to you who's a good friend of mine and who's a great worker, a beautiful black woman who's done a lot of work. She's worked around Rap Brown and a few other of our fallen heroes at the moment. Flo Kennedy. Okay. All right.
They got the last of the good ones.
Yeah.
Hey. That was the last of the good ones. That was the last of the good ones. Now it's up to us. Now it's the time for the hymn singing. They're going to try to pull a Jack Kennedy. You know, everybody's sorry. Everybody loved Martin Luther King. That's why they let him go to jail. Everybody loved him. That's why you didn't hear a peep when they got an injunction against him for a peaceful march, the poor soul. Everybody loved him. That's why the Ku Klux Klan had to prevail on Johnson to call leaders of what? Leaders of the prostitution of your rights. And they're entitled to prostitute your rights because you don't do a damn thing to get them. But that was the last of the good ones. And I'm sorry about that. Richie Havens is here. I'm going to quote him.
There must be some way out of here, said the joker to the thief. There's so much confusion, I can't get no relief. Businessmen, they drink my wine, proud men dig my earth. None of them along the line know what any of it is worth. No, no. No need to get excited, said the joker. He finally spoke. There's too many among us to think that life is but a joke. And I, we've been through that. This is not our fate. Let us not speak falsely now. The hour is getting late, 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 late. Oh, watchtower, the princess kept the view. Other women came and went, barefoot servants too. Hey, outside in the distance, a wildcat did growl. Two riders came approaching, the wind began in the house, yeah, 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 yeah. But remember, it's all along the watchtower, all along the watchtower, all along the watchtower.
Richie Havens.
At this time, I'd like to introduce to you Mr. Jarvis Piner, National Director of the Du Bois Clubs.
Hear, hear.
America has lost a real leader. The world has lost a real leader. In this struggle to change this world, to change America, a whole lot of leaders may go down. A whole lot of us may go down. But I don't know how everybody else feels, but when I decided to get myself in this struggle, I said at that point, God damn it, give me freedom or give me death, God damn it. And I'm ready to give my life if that's what's necessary to change this goddamn situation in this country. And I think we got a crisis in this country. I think we got a situation here. And I think the answers in the thousands of people that are standing out here today, we got the answer. The answer, goddammit, is struggle. The answer is fight. The answer is stand up, be proud, be black, but fight. Now I think everybody gathered here today wants to do something. They want to feel their power. They want to express themselves. I think we ought to leave here today, and I think we ought to go down and confront Mayor Lindsay. It is that bastard that's called for tanks in Harlem. He's got a nerve to pretend to be the freedom, to be a friend of black people in this country, and at the same time, he's signing their death warrant. With all these repressive laws he's passed, with the millions of dollars he's spending on tanks and guns, I say we march from here through Times Square down to City Hall and confront him. I'm going to talk a little bit about lynching Bird Johnson. That racist fascist had a nerve to stand up and use Dr. King's distorted image and use him for his own gain. He's supposed to be against blind violence. What the hell are they doing in Vietnam?
Go, brother.
He's supposed to be against blind violence. What the hell are they doing with the National Guard, with the riot guns, with the billions of dollars they're spending to kill black people? I think we got to tell it like it is. America is a violent country. Let's tell it like it is. Now, the LBJ said in the State of the Union message, we're going to start a war on crime. That meant war on black people, let's face it. He said, we won't tolerate violence. Violence won't bring progress. That meant black people stay in your place, goddammit, because we're going to kill you. That's what that meant. And when he said that, listen now, when he said that, he gave a license to that fascist maniac who killed Dr. King. The blood is on LBJ's hands. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Today, we need the most massive kind of struggle that we could ever muster. I think that's what Dr. King stood for, and I think that's why he was killed. Because he called the millions together. Because he rallied the millions to struggle. His poor people's thing in Washington was to bring the millions together, to express their opposition to this war, to express their need for jobs and against oppression and poverty. And I think that's the kind of direction America needs now. Now's the time to end repression. Now's the time for 2 billion jobs this summer. 2 million jobs for the unemployed black and white. That's what we need now. Not a penny more for oppression. Not a penny more.
Right about now, we would like to introduce a man who is supposed to run with Dr. Martin Luther King as vice president on the freedom ticket in California. He is the foremost authority on helping people evade the draft. He has been arrested many times for helping us, the brothers and sisters. I want to give to you now none other than Dr. Spark.
I had great respect for Dr. King, and I had great love for Dr. King.
Quiet!
Dr. King.
Brothers, sisters, and friends. Again, I say, you know, a couple of people have invaded the stage, and you're up here, and nobody's bothering you, but please don't talk louder than I do, and I got a pretty heavy voice. Now, brothers, sisters, and friends, I know the mood is hot, and I know how you feel. I was out there last night, too, and I was feeling pretty bad. But when Flo Kennedy told you about some of your white allies who have done things like help raise bail for people like Rap Brown, when some of us weren't able to contribute as well as we could, and things like this, and some of our black brothers got in trouble with the draft, and some of us either couldn't help them or didn't know how to help them or didn't have the means, there were people who were willing to help them. And I think at a time like this, in the memory of Martin Luther King, the least we can do, I mean, there's enough white racists out there for you to take everything out on. There's enough of them. But if you look around this park and you realize how many millions of people there are in America, you know they ain't all here. So there's a hell of a lot of them left over for you. But at this time, I sincerely beg and beseech you, please, let Dr. Benjamin Spock get a word in edgewise. I thank you one and all. And now I will present to you, and I would like a little bit of, you know what it is, what I'm talking about, Dr. Benjamin Spock.
I'm impressed that a woman can do so much easier than a man, what was just done silencing this crowd. I said before, I had enormous respect for Dr. King, and I came to love Dr. King. And I also want to say that I love Mrs. King, too, and let's remember her today and all write a letter to her, a most inspiring woman and a good mother. What I want to say now is particularly to the white people in the audience here. The President's Commission on Civil Disorders came in with a pretty good report, much more honest than most reports of its kind. What has been the effect? Generally speaking, it has been greeted with a significant silence. The President hasn't even had the courage to say that he supported it. He only said that he recommended that people read it and study it. Richard Nixon characteristically came out more flat-footedly. He said that it didn't put enough emphasis on oppression in the streets, and we know where he stands. There is an enormous job to be done to get racial justice in the United States. Even if all of us start with all the enthusiasm and strength that we have, it still is going to take one decade, two decades, three decades to really get justice in this country. But it's time for us to start. Dr. King stood not just for nonviolence. Dr. King stood for militancy. And the white people will do no honor to Dr. King if they just say, too bad, he was a wonderful man. The only meaning that we can take from his death is to rededicate ourselves to become militant in trying to get racial justice in this country.
Saturday.
Okay.
Can I have a hand with Dr. Spock? Thank you. And now, Richard Tucson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You people out there in the audience, you don't know me. And but I'm not trying. And I'm not trying to become a Stokely Carmichael or an H. Rat Brown or a Malcolm X. I'm telling you, I'm a black individual telling you that we are in a racist country and something is going to have to be done about it. You understand? I'm telling you again that somebody wants you to walk up on 42nd Street and burn down movie theaters when I'm trying to tell you to go down to Wall Street and get to the system that we are all crippled under. Yeah. Yeah. You understand? It's because of the capitalist system that we got my black brothers and sisters down in Mississippi starving, and we got black brothers and sisters up there in New York State starving. You got poor Kentucky whites starving, and y'all gonna say, march on 42nd Street. It's right here in the United States of America where you gotta become, right here, you gotta start thinking, what's happening to you? Why we got poor schools uptown? The problem has to be dealt with. You understand? I don't want to burn down America. I dig the place. But they don't dig me. They don't dig me. They don't dig me. They don't dig me. I went up Sunday. Sunday. Now, if you don't believe me, if you have any students here from NYU, you go up to NYU Hall of Fame, and there wasn't one black bus up there, one black statue of no black man. Not one. And they got room for one up there now. And before I die, I bet your king is going to be up there. That's it. That's it. King is going to be up there. I say it again. I say it again. You don't know me. It's the first time I spoke to so many people in all my life. And I'm telling you, you got to become realistic. I'm black. I'm black, brother. I was there last night when they broke in the liquor stores. Believe it or not, I ain't lying. For the first time, I had to let some depression loose. I stood there. I watched the brothers break in the liquor store. And I said, "Two, what are you standing there for? Go in there with them." I hopped on the counter. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I said, yeah. I hopped on the counter, and I went in there, and I snatched me some brands I ain't never heard of. They home. You see, when the riots broke out in Detroit, They told you about the cops they had in the riot district. Well, Lord knows they didn't tell you about the son of a guns surrounding General Motors. They didn't tell you that. They gonna keep the General Motors and Dow Chemical Company. They gonna surround all these things, you see? Because they don't want you to get to them. But this is the power structure right now that's laughing at. I don't know how many of us in here, 8 million, 2 million, they laughing at us because they say, these people ain't going to do nothing. They going to rap all their life. They ain't going to do nothing. But I'm telling you, time has to come now. If a man feel like he's ready to die and I'm ready to die, something's going to have to go something. I'm telling you, let me tell you, United States of America, like Malcolm made a statement, the chicken has come on the roost one time. And he meant, If they kill President Kennedy, you know, they don't take twice about killing you. And we seen that. We seen that in Birmingham, Alabama. Four little innocent girls, children. Ain't nothing been done about it. Chicken heart say, right? Right? You know what I'm saying? Again, the same. Here's a man, Martin Luther King, who preached nonviolence, who was a Baptist preacher. A preacher, a Baptist preacher on the white Protestant Anglo-Saxon beliefs who preached nonviolence. And what happened? He died on that platform. He died on that platform. Here's Malcolm at the end. He gets killed when he decides that what we should do in America is put the United States on trial so Charles Irving Arnold and his boys code for CIA. Charles Irving Arnold, they had him blasted away. They had him blasted away. You understand? So I'm telling you now, either do two things, either go downtown, do something with Wall Street, or put this goddamn country on trial because it should be on trial. Yeah.
Wall Street, hmm? This is 5 o'clock Shadow, where we have been listening to an anniversary retrospective of the events surrounding the death of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, his assassination in Memphis on the 4th of April, 1968, and the ensuing events, including two remarkable presentations by the late, also assassinated, Senator and former Attorney General Robert Bobby Kennedy. And the portion that we just heard were actualities of the anniversary today of the April 5th gathering in Central Park in response to the assassination of Dr. King in the midst of a nationwide outbreak of urban insurrections. Sometimes they're called by some people riots, but there was a great consternation across the nation at that time. And these actualities that you've just heard were originally broadcast live on Pacifica Station, WBAI, and produced by David Rapkin and the team of producers that covered the event that day. This is 5 O'Clock Shadow. I'm Robert Knight in New York. And we note today with regret the passing of a great journalist, Gil Noble, a longtime anchor correspondent for WABC television and longtime host of the public affairs program Like It Is, passed away overnight at the age of 80 as a consequence of a stroke that he suffered in the year 2011. And we extend our condolences to family, friends, and viewers. And that concludes today's edition of 5 O'Clock Shadow. We'd like to give thanks for production in today's program to Thiago Barroso, and for engineering to Michael G. Haskins. Thanks also to the Pacifica Radio Archives. And we welcome your comments, tips, queries, suggestions with emails to theshadow@wbai.org, theshadow at wbai.org. And for 5 O'Clock Shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.
somebody. Welcome. Come on in. Don't even walk there that cold. They might know where that place is.
Thank you.